and so much more. Proper packaging also increases shelf life, which is important for consumers. Previously, food items such as spices and dairy products were purchased bulk from customers abroad due to a lack of packaging. While exporting items in bulk has benefits, it's not as profitable as selling prepackaged foodstuff. So, in addition to adding value to raw products such as meat, companies have also designed attractive packaging to contain food in more manageable portions. Such a strategy increases not only product quality, but also food safety, which helps producers meet international export standards. This trend also helps companies with branding and has created job opportunities for designers.
As you probably already know, the food industry is heavily dependent on production in the agriculture sector. So it's no surprise that the agriculture sector holds the pulse of national food security and food exports. Plus, it is one of the only sectors that has been sanctioned, and the global coronavirus outbreak, that was horrible.
We looked at some figures from the Ministry of Agriculture to see how this sector is doing. Last year, around 6 million tons of agricultural and foodstuff products were exported. Trade of these products raked in roughly $4 billion. Pistachio, saffron, and confectionery products topped the export charts in value during that period. Other agriculture sectors, such as livestock, poultry, and aquaculture, have also generated millions of dollars in exports. Last year, nearly 450,000 tons of these items were sent to markets in neighboring regions, worth $500 million. Agriculture accounts for 8% of the country's gross domestic product. It might be interesting to know that around half of Iran's total non-oil trade comes from this sector. That's all based on data from Iran's Ministry of Agriculture. According to Iran's Customs Administration, the total non-oil trade value rose nearly 40% last year. Over 120 million tons of non-oil products worth $72 billion were traded with other countries in that period. Meanwhile, the government has implemented measures to encourage the development of agriculture. One trend this sector is witnessing is the application of smart technologies for the cultivation and harvest of various products. There has also been a boom in developing greenhouses and green practices to preserve natural resources. The word plastic was initially used to describe pliable and easily shaped objects. However, it only recently became a name for a category of materials called polymers. Such materials are abundant in nature. Take cellulose, for example. It's the material that makes up the cell walls of plants. However, synthetic polymers are a more recent invention of the last 150 years. These come from the plentiful carbon atoms found in fossil fuels. Since then, they have become an integral part of the industry, technology, and even various sciences.
We will explore Iran's plastic and polymer productions. We will also check out some of its downstream markets and their contributions to the national economy. These days, we use more plastic than ever before. It's terrible. So where does this material come from? And what goes into making this stuff? Let's find out.
Our quest for answers led us to a company specializing in making various polymer products. Parsa Polymer Sharif was established some 20 years ago and is a knowledge-based company that was born in the research department of the University of Sharif. As a leading advanced polymer compound manufacturer, it makes various products essential to everyday living. It produces compounds based on commodity thermoplastic resins like PP, PE, and the famous PET, or PET. It also engineers resins like PVC and so much more. This knowledge-based company is a major supplier of raw materials to many industries.
Some include original equipment manufacturers in the automotive market and PVC pipe producers in the construction industry. Over the years, this company has helped Iran save millions on products that would otherwise be imported. This firm has three main functions: research and development, innovation center, and production. It also has a brand new line for researching and producing biodegradable polymers for the packaging industry. Most of the raw materials needed for production are domestically purchased. When this stuff enters the company, it is first tested and graded based on its quality. Then, according to its intended use, the raw material is formulated and sent to machines for production.
Machines used in the polymer industry utilizes some of the most advanced machinery for production. The extruder is one of the most commonly used machines. They play a central role in plastic production. Extruder lines are the largest converters of plastics worldwide. Some of these machines can be domestically manufactured while others are still imported.
Its products are all tested in its well-equipped research and development lab. The various granules and resin compounds undergo over a dozen tests while being analyzed for quality here. Also, new product formulas are created in this highly technical research and development department. Through these facilities, the company is expanding its product portfolio. Products made here are produced along the lines of exports. So, national and international quality standards are implemented during the production processes. This means the quality of products found here doesn't just match international standards, they go beyond the quality of competing foreign brands in the international arena. The headquarters of this company is located in Sharif University Advanced Technologies Incubator. Owing to this, it has strong relations and collaborations with the scientific community. It has also been awarded for its contributions to the scientific and industrial sectors over the past years. This knowledge-based company also exports its products. The company has a unique future vision strongly intertwined with sustainable business development. This is partly due to its forward-thinking and social and environmental responsibility outlook.
Now, polymers are the primary materials that build many other products. Plastic items have different polymer formulations depending on their application. The majority of polymers made in Iran are domestically consumed. Some of its biggest customers are in the construction sector. Also, plastic is extensively used in the medical industry and transportation.
Almost everything around us is either made of plastic or has some plastic component. Moreover, plastic has played a central role in the development of the medical industry over the past 60 years. These materials are used to create hemodialysis machines, disposable needles, IV drips, and testing equipment vital to modern medicine. Plastics have also had a considerable impact on developing high-quality prosthetics. The National Medical Device Directorate estimates that Iran's share in the global medical device market will reach well over $7 billion in the next 3 years. PVC materials are also largely used in Iran's construction industry. For example, Iran's Doors and Windows Manufacturers Association estimates the domestic demand for PVC doors and windows is around 35,000 tons annually. This is partly due to the current residential construction boom in the country. The home appliance industry is also another mammoth customer of the polymer industry. Based on figures from the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, Iran has doubled its production in this sector over the last 3 years. In 2021, around 15 million home appliance units were produced, with exports soaring to roughly $140 million. So, polymer production is key in expanding many manufacturing industries, which have raked in large amounts of foreign revenue for the country. Well, I believe it is that time of the show where I should take a little break and pass the action over to my good friend and colleague out there on the field. Take it away.
Despite all the advancements in technology and the problems it has solved, food security is one it hasn't. In fact, it is becoming more and more of an issue beyond the countries that have always been grappling with it. One solution is to, well, end inflation and the global economic crisis, but that's hardly a solution. There's no end in sight with that. But another way is to use technology to make things more efficient. We wouldn't be needing more land because we're not getting it thanks to desertification of more and more land. We also wouldn't be needing more water because we're also not getting it, also thanks to desertification. We would actually need less of both, if only we could manage our resources better.
Iran has some potential for farming and agriculture, and that's a massive understatement if you've ever heard one. But we could definitely do with some improvements, some innovations in the field, especially with irrigation, because, well, we've been experiencing some drought and some water shortages a little bit more than what climate change would warrant. And that's why we're here to check out a smart greenhouse that believes has the answer, that the shakeup that the industry needs to be a lot more efficient, especially with water, plus some extra goodies. So stay tuned to this episode of The Bazaar to check out what they've been able to come up with.
About that efficiency, greenhouses can help provide that by creating a controlled environment that, while it could be much smaller than a field, it can yield higher quality produce and more produce per acre. Greenhouses can protect the crops and vegetables from extreme weather conditions, pests, or really any other external threat. The parameters that are controlled in a greenhouse are light, ventilation, humidity, and temperature. This would allow the farmers to create the kind of optimal micro-ecosystem that would eventually lead to them growing healthier, tastier, more nutritious, and, you know, better-looking produce.
What you will find in this smart greenhouse are tomatoes, cherry tomatoes, bell pepper, and cucumbers. There are certain types of fruits and vegetables that are preferred to be used in greenhouses, for example, the ones that I just mentioned. And there are certain types of crops that are not optimal for greenhouse use, for example, wheat and rice. But that's just some information about greenhouses in general. What makes this particular greenhouse unique and smart is that all of the parameters that need to be kept in check in a greenhouse are all monitored and manipulated remotely through the cloud and Internet of Things, instead of some worker or some farmers coming in and out of the greenhouse to manipulate things manually. That's the smart aspect of it in a nutshell. But to find out more information about the smartness of this greenhouse, let's hear from some of the experts here.
In this greenhouse, we measure all essential parameters for the plants, like temperature, moisture, CO2, ambient light, the water parameters, and the moisture of the roots, using the available sensors, and control them with the actuators and the smart control unit, and also remotely control it via Internet of Things. With properly controlling the climate and the irrigation system, we increase the productivity up to 30% and decrease the water consumption by up to 40% comparing other hydroponic greenhouses in our country. And in the next step, we are trying to recycle the drained water of the irrigation system and pass it through some filters and put it back again into the irrigation system in order to further decrease the water consumption. And also, we are developing a robotic harvester, including a mobile-based manipulator, soft gripper, and vision system equipped with artificial intelligent algorithm in order to detect the ripe crops and pick them in the proper time.
1% of the world's water resources are fresh water, and most of it, in fact, 70% of it, is used in agriculture. What we choose to do with that tiny, finite reserve is a responsibility that we need to bear. Greenhouses can control the irrigation of plants. You may have sophisticated plumbing systems in the ground or in the cocoa peats, as you will see, to prevent overwatering, which can promote rots and fungal diseases, and reduce evaporation, saving huge amounts of water in the process. There is even the option to recycle the runoff water and put it back into the system to further save up on water. The great thing about this particular smart greenhouse is that you don't need to be born into a farmer family that has thousands of acres of land to make this a viable option to you. You can own land as small as 100 square meters and it would still be a financially viable option for you, especially since after the initial installation phase and the setup process, you won't be needing much manpower to control the environment.
Interest has been shown in this smart greenhouse by certain countries, especially in Africa, such as Kenya, Niger, and Ethiopia. The idea, and of course the working proof of the idea, really has the potential to shake up the industry. And if it catches on, it can only mean good things for the farmers and the food sector in general. Thank you for staying tuned to another episode of Bazaar.
Many thanks for that wonderful report. Well, that brings us to the end of our show today. I've been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. The limelight.
French police have risked the lives of migrants trying to cross the English Channel to the United Kingdom in small boats by using dangerous tactics, including puncturing boats and threatening migrants with pepper spray. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. French police funded by the UK government have endangered the lives of vulnerable migrants by intercepting small boats in the English Channel using tactics that search and rescue experts say could cause a mass casualty event. Shocking new evidence obtained by The Guardian, Lighthouse Reports, Le Monde and Der Spiegel reveals for the first time that the French maritime police have tried physically to force small boats to turn around, manoeuvres known as pullbacks, in an attempt to prevent them reaching British shores. Newly obtained video footage, leaked documents and witness testimonies show that the French authorities have used aggressive tactics including circling a migrant boat, causing waves to flood the dinghy, ramming into a small boat whilst threatening passengers with a large tank of pepper spray, and puncturing boats when they are already at sea, forcing migrants to swim back to shore. The French authorities have previously refused the Britons' request for them to carry out interceptions at sea, stating that they contravened international maritime law. But evidence indicates there has been an escalation in the use of these tactics since last summer. Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has pledged to stop the boats crossing the Channel and has promised hundreds of millions of pounds to France to pay for more surveillance and border guards to prevent people making the journey. Recently, the government's Safety of Rwanda Asylum and Immigration Bill suffered several defeats in the House of Lords, delaying the Prime Minister's plan to see flights for Kigali take off until after Easter. Ministers claim that the bill will act as a deterrent to all those crossing the channel from northern France to Britain. In the first video obtained and verified for this investigation, a police boat in Dunkirk harbour circles close to a dinghy holding about 25 people, creating a wake that floods the boat. The police vessel is seen advancing towards the dinghy at speed before turning sharply to create waves, circling and coming back again. Migrants are seen wearing foam-packed life jackets and attempting to bail water out using their shoes. Sources have confirmed that the police patrol vessel used to carry out the maneuver seen in the video was brought by the French authorities with funding provided by the British government under the Sandhurst Treaty, a bilateral border security deal signed at the Royal Military Academy in 2018. One search and rescue expert who was shown the video footage said that it is a textbook pushback, exactly the same as we have seen in Greece, adding that one maneuver alone could cause a mass casualty event. The water is deep enough to drown in. I've seen this in the central Mediterranean many times, but this is the first time that I've seen anything like this happening in the English Channel. Previous evidence has shown how the Greek Coast Guard has forced boats carrying migrants back into the Turkish waters in the Aegean Sea, in some cases by maneuvering around them at high speed to create waves. Two senior British Border Force sources confirmed that the tactic could lead to multiple deaths and injuries. One operational Border Force official said, "If the blades of the French boat make contact with the vessel, it will slash right through the vessel," adding, "The other thing is a collision. The weight and the force of that vessel could ride straight over the top of the rib. It would knock the passengers out, knock them unconscious and into the water. It could potentially lead to a large number of deaths. I can't believe any mariner could condone that." Maritime experts added that they would be very surprised if Border Force and HM Coast Guard were not aware of these tactics being used, with one adding, 100%, someone high up will definitely be aware of this." In a second video clip, members of the French gendarmerie drive along a dinghy in a speedboat about 12 miles from the French coast, threatening to use a large tank of pepper spray against the boat carrying migrants. They then proceed to ram their vessel into the dinghy. A Border Force official said they don't even know who's on board, whether there's someone asthmatic that they're using pepper spray against, or pregnant women, adding, "That could really harm people." In evidence of a third attempted pullback, a complaint filed by a member of the French Customs Coast Guard to the public prosecutor in Boulogne-sur-Mer charged that on 11th of August 2023, police officers ordered a National Society of Sea Rescue's crew to puncture a small boat that had already set sail. In an email seen by this investigation, the complainant, Remy van der Plaak, states that the National Society of Sea Rescue's crew obviously refused to do this, adding that the risk of drowning if they had done so was obvious and imminent. Testimony from several sources who boarded small boats bound for Britain support the claims that French police have used such tactics. One man who was from India said, "There were four of them, French gendarmes, on the boat. They went around the boat in a circle and then they stabbed the boat and left. We had to swim for about 10 minutes. We nearly died." On 9th of February 2024, the man lodged a complaint with the French Human Rights Ombudsman. The incident is currently under investigation. The website Politico has also covered the same story and tells us more. Sources within France's Interior Ministry have described the British government's enormous pressure on a daily basis for the French Maritime Police to prevent small boat departures, with one French civil servant describing the pressure as intense and non-stop. Another senior civil servant, who was in post until the end of 2020, added, "As far as the British were concerned, the boats had to be caught at sea. They sometimes insisted on it." In September of last year, the then British Immigration Minister, Robert Jenrick, said in the House of Commons that there is clearly more that we need the French to do for us, pointing to a recent trip to Belgium, where he said the authorities had been willing to intercept in the water small boats leaving its shores. Robert Jenrick added, "That has proven decisive. Small boats from Belgian waters are now extremely rare, so that is an approach that we encouraged the French to." 2021, during a visit to the Greek island of Samos, then Home Secretary Priti Patel went out on patrol with the Greek Coast Guard, which is known for its use of aggressive pushbacks in the Aegean Sea. A Home Office source with knowledge of the trip said she came back invigorated, adding, "They were very aggressive, had a good success rate of detection, and were swift in how they processed them, the asylum seekers." She liked their posturing of protecting borders and working with the military, though there was recognition that a lot of this wouldn't be lawful in Britain. Britain has allocated more than £700 million to France to prevent irregular migration since 2014. At a summit in March of 2023, Prime Minister Sunak announced that Britain would give France £500 million over 3 years to fund additional border guards and a new detection facility, as well as video surveillance cameras, drones and night vision binoculars, among other equipment.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad. Hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. My pleasure.
Well, we are talking about, some of the jurisprudential laws related to fasting and this blessed month of Ramadan, according to the laws issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Let me start our episodes with this interesting question, and it might be actually something that lots of people are suffering from, I mean, diabetics. And these people need to take insulin injections every now and then, like once or twice even a day. Well, also their meals should not be delayed and taken at long intervals. Otherwise, they might go into a coma or have trouble. Well, that is why physicians advise them to have 4 meals a day or even more. Well, would you please give your opinion concerning their fasting?
If they know that abstaining from eating and drinking from dawn to sunset is harmful to their health, or they fear that it might harm them, then it is actually not obligatory for them to fast. In fact, it is not even permissible for them to fast in the when there one has genuine fear and there is reasonable ground for not fasting, because obviously there are many diabetic patients and they have to drink water every now and then. If they do not, then maybe their sugar will jump to a degree which might even cause consequences, might have consequences for them.
Mm.
So if there is such genuine fear, it is actually not permissible for them to fast.
Mm-hmm, I see. Okay, during the month of Ramadan, a duty bound decides to break his fast, but changes his mind before doing so. All right? Is his fast valid? Because is it still fasting? He didn't break it, although he intended to do so, right? But
yes,
before changing his mind, he continued to fasting. So is his fast valid? What about the fast other than the month of Ramadan? Like, for example, recommended fasting. Or something like a qadha of the missed fast.
You're right.
In the months other than Ramadan.
Well, we do know that intention, or what we call niyat, is a basic element of the religious practices. No religious act is, in fact, valid without genuine intention to comply with God's order and to seek closeness to Him. And the same is the case with the fasting of the month of Ramadan. During the month of Ramadan, if a person ceases to intend to fast, for example, he does not have the intention to continue his fasting, then it invalidates his fast. And then trying to make the intention again and to continue fasting is of no avail to him, because he broke his fast. Even he has not eaten or drunk anything, but when you cease to fast and you have the intention not to fast, and then after a while, okay, you regret your decision and you try to intend again to fast, that will be of no use to you.
Mm.
So one should avoid doing things which invalidate fast, like, for example, having the niyyah is one of the pillars of the fast of Ramadan. And if, for example, a person doubts whether he has made such a decision or not, he can continue his fast, and his fasting will be definitely valid.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sheikh Shabbi. Let's take a short break, and we'll be back to continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
Ya Allah, thank you for another chance standing at my door. Ya Allah, you've given me hope, delivered this gift right to my home. Marhab, marhab, ya Ramadan, ahi qulubana bil Qur'an.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to fasting and the month of Ramadan. Well, Sheikh Javid, we know, and correct me if I'm wrong, that if somebody's offering his prayer, usually bleeding invalidates his prayer, so he has to stop saying the
prayer.
Do you
mean prayer,
right?
Or fasting?
No, I mean prayer.
Okay. Good.
But what about bleeding while you're fasting?
That is good. Well, you know that blood is impure. It's not saliva, it is blood. Okay, maybe your saliva is mixed with blood. So blood is something essentially impure, whether it comes from you or from any other animal or something.
Mm-hmm.
So bleeding in the mouth does not make your fast void unless you actually swallow it. And of course, a fasting person must make every effort to prevent the blood from reaching his throat. And if it accidentally goes into his throat, there's not his fast is not void. But if he knows and knowingly he swallows the saliva which is mixed with blood, then his fast becomes void. Even if it comes out from his gums, from his tongue, from some part of his mouth surface.
Mm-hmm. What about the cuts and wounds, if they open while you're, you know,
so the blood actually comes from either some
any part of any limb, basically.
Okay.
I'm not talking about only the... In the mouth.
Yeah, you are not swallowing it. You are, a fasting person, the cuts and injuries or wounds or anything that comes from, that is present on your body, maybe it's on your hand or your legs or any other parts of your body, they do not affect your fast.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing to worry about.
But if it is happening inside your mouth, then?
Yeah, then you shouldn't swallow the blood. And you
have to spit it out.
Yeah, you should throw it out, yes. And then the thing is that, yes, it is impure and you should not swallow it.
Mm, I see. Okay, thank you very much. Let's take an early break and then we'll come back and continue our program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Just don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah, don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to the month of Ramadan and fasting. Well, Sheikh Javid, some people are kind of addicted to different things like cigarettes or even narcotics. And some individuals use NOS,
yes,
right? Which is made of tobacco and other constituents. And they put it on their tongues for a few minutes, and then they even spit it out. But does this ingredient, actually, or entity, NOS, I mean, does it void the fast?
Well, the rules which apply to this tobacco-made ingredient, the rules which apply to it is very much the same as the rule which applies to smoking. And we did discuss it in the previous episode, in one of the previous episodes, actually, that smoking is not permissible as an obligatory precaution because it affects your fast. The same rule applies to NOS. It's not permissible as an obligatory precaution for people to use of course, NOS, or whatever, actually, tobacco products, you know. The same rule applies to the drugs which are absorbed through the nose or through the tongue, placed under the tongue, or maybe it's a kind of snuff used, whatever. Things made from tobacco products should not be used as an obligatory precaution.
But they don't actually take in, like they don't
swallow. Yeah, they
swallow,
do swallow it.
Right?
Yeah.
So even if they don't swallow, but it invalidates.
Yeah, it invalidates as an obligatory precaution. There is no fatwa here.
Sheikh Javid, as a quick question here, till the end of the program, we don't have much time. You know, asthma patients use a kind of spray which is called inhalers,
yes,
right?
Sure.
And in that spray, there's a vapor-borne powder which enters the patient's lungs, those people who are suffering from asthma, right?
Yes.
So that through their mouth, they have to actually inhale,
yes,
like into their mouth, providing them relief, basically, so that they could breathe.
Yes.
At times, asthma patients need to use it several times a day. Is it permissible for them to fast while using such a spray?
Yeah. This is spray which is used by people who, you know, have problem with their respiratory system, and they use it to have a kind of to alleviate their problem. In fact, is allowed to use, and it does not invalidate the fast. And of course, it's just as you said; it is a vapor-borne powder, which simply alleviates breathing problem, and it is not an invalidating agent.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javed, and thank you, my dear listeners, for joining your own program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio with me, Mama Jawad, and on behalf of the rest of the crew, we bid you farewell, and we ask you urgently to keep us in your du'as in this blessed month. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Oh Allah, please unite us and guide us to paradise. Oh!
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
In the Great Mosque of the Old City of Sana'a, the Yemeni Scholars Association convened a meeting calling for the nation's scholars to fulfill their role in the Al-Akhlud battle and the ensuing victory. The event saw a significant turnout of Yemeni scholars.
Our message to the scholars who have shirked their responsibility to support Gaza is to fear God, for that will expose them to God's punishment in this world and the hereafter. Silence regarding what our brothers endure in Gaza amounts to participating in the Zionist enemy's crimes against children and women. The people will also justify their silence with the silence of their scholars and rulers. Therefore, their sin is greater than that of the rest of the people.
The participants criticized the inaction of Muslim scholars regarding the atrocities in Gaza, labeling it the genocidal war by Israel. They emphasized the scholars' profound responsibility, asserting their religious duty to support their Palestinian brothers. They argued that the current situation in Palestine is the consequence of decades of silence.
The responsibility of the scholars is great, as they are the ones who can move the streets and the people, and they can compel the rulers to act with the fatwa or word from them in support of Gaza.
Since the onset of the war on Gaza, Yemeni scholars have actively participated in weekly demonstrations supporting Palestine and have encouraged public demonstrations in solidarity. Furthermore, the Scholars Association has declared its support for the Yemeni military's naval operations targeting Israeli maritime activities and its allies. Yemeni scholars assert that the normalization deals between Arab countries and Israel have emboldened the regime to continue its oppressive campaign against Palestinians. They urge all Muslim scholars to advocate for Palestine, regardless of their government's possessions. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana.
Iraqi Prime Minister Mohammed Shia al-Sudani will meet with U.S. President Joe Biden in Washington on April 15 for talks on the U.S. military presence in the Arab country. Also, a range of other issues, including the fight against Daesh and the ongoing Iraqi financial reforms, will be discussed.
The demands of Iraqi nation and political blocs will be taken to Washington by the Prime Minister. We all know there is a large consensus in the country to end the foreign forces' presence. The Prime Minister will also discuss the economic situation and challenges, most importantly, the U.S. dollar exchange rates, which have been affecting the market since the imposition of sanctions by U.S. Treasury on Iraqi banks.
In January, Baghdad and Washington began formal talks about ending the coalition mission, purportedly formed to help the Iraqi forces to fight Daesh terrorist group. After the defeat of Daesh in 2017 by Iraqi anti-terror forces, the U.S. still stationed some 2,500 troops in Iraq and 900 in neighboring Syria as a part of the coalition mission.
It's time for the government to end the coalition mission. It's the demand of the Iraqi people. We all agree that these forces have gone too far, violating our sovereignty, so today we witnessed a cause by the Iraqi nation that the time has come for these forces to leave.
Following the parliamentary decision in 2020, Iraqi authorities have agreed for drawing up a timeline to end the presence of foreign forces, which proved by action to be a threat to the country's stability. Iraqi nation agrees that foreign forces' presence is no longer necessary, and the Prime Minister will carry their demands to Washington. Muslim Salem, Baghdad.
Salman Qasimi, an Islamic school teacher, says it's an unprecedented move in India to ban madrasas instantly, calling it a blow to marginalized Muslim families across India's most populous state of Uttar Pradesh. He says lives of thousands of families are directly dependent on such institutions, while the government of Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi accuses them of receiving illegal funding. Scholars argue such institutions are building blocks of Islamic teachings across the country, which regular schools can't do.
This judgment is unfortunate. We respect the court decision, but we oppose it. Our constitution allows us to have such schools to teach Islamic values to future generations. If this is against secularism, why it was made in the first place? Every citizen can read, write, promote or propagate their religion. That's what our constitution says. Madrasa's instant closure is a blow to livelihood of thousands of families.
In January, the government of Uttar Pradesh state halted a funding program for madrasas, leaving more than 20,000 teachers unemployed. Scholars say Friday's verdict applies to all Islamic schools in the state that are privately and government funded. In recent months, India's northeastern state of Assam converted hundreds of madrasas into conventional schools.
All the laws and all the things which are BJP is enacting or BJP is targeting the Muslim community, definitely they think that the if they want to rule the country, so they can rule the country when they can demonize Muslim community, they can suppress Muslim community, they can make them wetless at the time of election. So all these efforts are taking place because of the RSS background, RSS agenda of the present ruling party.
In recent months, Modi's government turned down new proposals from the states and halted payments to schemes that would finance Muslim schools. Critics say this amounts to snatching the livelihood of thousands of families instantly, while they have no other means of earning.
India will hold general elections in a few weeks' time.
and the BJP's victory is imminent, according to observers. Activists and rights groups have accused the governing party of promoting anti-Islamic rhetoric in a deliberate attempt to appease the majority voters by polarizing the voters, therefore using divide and rule policy to win the elections.
Rights groups have accused the BJP government of persecuting and intimidating Muslims through all possible means. The accusation BJP rejects, saying India is a vibrant democracy enshrined in equality for all. Critics accuse the ruling party of systematic repression against the largest minority group, including hate crimes, mob lynching and cow vigilantism amid rising Islamophobia. Observers say such issues pave the way for Prime Minister Modi to remain in office for a third consecutive term. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Pakistan has joined the global celebrations of a very special Nowruz that has coincided with the holy month of Ramadan. Nowruz, which translates to New Day, is celebrated by millions of peoples worldwide as the Persian New Year, symbolizing rebirth, renewal, and arrival of spring.
To all my fellow Pakistanis celebrating Nowruz, I say let's cherish our cultural diversity and come together in solidarity. May this new year bring us prosperity, peace, and happiness.
Despite its Persian origins, Nowruz in Pakistan is celebrated with a distinctive local flavor, incorporating regional traditions and customs. Pakistanis have their own customs to welcome Nowruz. Besides preparing special meals and decorating the dining area with special dried and fresh fruits, the ancient occasion also creates an opportunity for individuals to mend broken ties, forgive others, let go of the past, and build stronger relationships in the coming new year.
For me, Nowruz is a time of reflection and renewal. It's a reminder to leave behind the past year's troubles and embrace the opportunities that lie ahead. It's a celebration of life, growth, and the beauty of nature.
We clean our house, we visit our friends, we celebrate this day, we enjoy a lot of festive foods, and you know, this day brings a lot of joy and happiness in our lives. So, happy Nowruz to all of you.
Pakistan's President Asif Ali Zardari and Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif have extended their heartfelt greetings to all those who are celebrating Nowruz in Pakistan and around the world. Both leaders also called for embracing the spirit of Nowruz and promoting the message of peace, compassion, unity, and kindness.
Nowruz signifies regeneration at the start of a new cycle. It transcends simple festivity, standing as a cultural landmark that enhances the diversity of human society. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
After weeks of silence, Kitab Hezbollah Resistance Group, one of the biggest units within Iraq's popular mobilization units, reminds the government, as well as officials in the committee tasked with overseeing the withdrawal of U.S. military, that they should not grant immunity to the occupying forces, or else gates of hell will open.
These foreign forces have been violating our sovereignty for years now. In January 2020, Donald Trump ordered the assassination of our anti-terror commanders, Lieutenant General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in Baghdad airport. And lately, they are violating it by assassination of Iraqi resistance commanders.
Kitab Hezbollah also warned that any removal of leaders of popular mobilization units must be decided by the PMU internally. It says acting otherwise would be a significant mistake.
Our government has made it clear on multiple occasions that the need for U.S. military forces have ended. Our security forces are capable of running the country's security system and face any threat. Washington is clearly trying to rally around the negotiations, and it is a clear attempt to delay their withdrawal from the country.
In January, the Iraqi resistance decided to halt the attacks on U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria. The attacks were started on October 19 in solidarity with Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Observers say that the suspension was to allow a climate of serenity for talks between Baghdad and Washington over the U.S. military presence. But as some have rightly noted, Washington has no intention to change its behavior in Iraq.
It is obvious that Washington is trying to gain more time to keep its military presence in Iraq. Our government needs to push forward and speed up the pace of negotiations to end the presence of these foreign forces and save our country's political, economic, and social stability.
On paper, the U.S. military forces are present in the country for advisory purposes, as well as training the Iraqi forces to fight Daesh terrorist group. However, in practice, the U.S. forces have shown a different objective by violating Iraqi sovereignty, attacking PMU positions, and killing top Iraqi commanders. Since the start of their operations in October, the resistance in Iraq has been pushing the government to end the U.S. military presence in the country. Also, they have time and again reiterated their solidarity with Palestinians. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
Russian President Vladimir Putin addressed the nation after the deadly attack in Moscow, which killed dozens of civilians. The president denounced the massacre as a bloody and barbaric terrorist attack, as he declared March 24 a national day of mourning. At least 11 suspects, including four perpetrators who directly participated in the shooting spree, have been arrested. The four direct perpetrators were detained in Bryansk region. According to the intelligence service, the terrorists planned to cross the Russian-Ukrainian border. The Russian president vowed to punish all involved in the massacre.
Organizers and customers of this crime will suffer a fair and inevitable punishment, whoever they are, whoever guides them. I repeat, we will identify and punish everyone who stands behind the terrorists, who prepared this atrocity, this attack on Russia, on our people.
The Daesh Takfiri terror group claimed responsibility, but Moscow has dismissed the claim, asserting that investigation is still underway to ascertain the main culprits. Russia's security service says the Moscow attackers had contacts in Ukraine supporting them. During interrogation, a detained terrorist said he was promised 5,000 rubles to carry out the terrorist attack. He claimed he watched a certain preacher on Telegram, and allegedly his assistant contacted the man.
The perpetrators are ignorant, illiterate people who will commit any crime for money. The question is different. Where is the planning center? Not a single international organization can act in the international arena, especially in a state like Russia, where there are strong power structures. Performers can be found anywhere through the agents. We went through this experience in Chechnya. This once again convinces us that international terrorist structures are the work of the CIA and Western intelligence services.
The attack, which came amid Ukraine's war with Russia, was the deadliest in the country since the Beslan school siege in 2004. After Friday's attack, Putin held discussion with his Belarusian counterpart Alexander Lukashenko. Both leaders confirmed their readiness to work together in the fight against terrorism.
In his address, President Putin said Moscow attackers were preparing to flee towards Ukraine, where a window had been prepared for them with the help of Ukraine. Now it remains to be seen how Russia is going to react to the massacre, which came in a very volatile region and amid its war against Ukraine. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Syrians used to say, no one sleeps hungry, but that was 13 years before the devastating terrorist war that was waged upon them, the war that has pushed many Syrians below the poverty line. SAID is an association that has been helping these people by providing daily meals to the needy during the fasting month for over a decade. Despite the increasing challenges, they are determined to continue with their mission.
We're currently operating a kitchen called Hunger Be Gone. Unfortunately, our resources this year are less than previous years due to the circumstances the country has been through, such as the earthquake disaster that drained a lot of financial resources. We distribute around 200 to 250 meals every day to the people who come to the association, while our motorcycle team also delivers meals to remote areas.
As a chef, I start every day at 9 a.m. by preparing the water and cooking the chicken for the scheduled meal. I have been volunteering for 5 years to help my fellow countrymen in these difficult circumstances.
Syrians have demonstrated their sense of responsibility in various ways during this crisis, particularly during the month of Ramadan. The Holy Month of Mercy encourages people to be selfless and to help alleviate the sufferings of others. Voluntary work is one of the ways through which Syrians showcase their contributions to society.
So we are here not only to donate financially, but to donate our time more specifically. Volunteering is something very important, especially for our generation.